One and all, once again, to Nerds on the Rocks, episode 185. I'm joined this week by James.
Hello.
And Justin.
Hola.
Sadgy, he's not Jesse. And I hope Justin gets that reference.
I get the joke.
Okay.
God.
Anyhow, we are here this week to talk about something that is near and... Okay, I'm not going to even say that. We are here to talk about first-person shooters.
I mean, technically, first-person shooters are near and dear to us. They're just, like, near and dear to our heads.
Well, I was going to say, I mean, they're not my favorite genre games. They are probably... It's weird. They're not my favorite, but they're probably my most frequently played, because I think they're the problem.
Well, I mean, I think, was it, like, 85% of them, like, make up the entire gaming, like, market for the year? Isn't like that?
I don't know if that's, as far as, like, I wouldn't imagine that for sales, and I can't imagine that overall with mobile and stuff factored in. But yeah, I mean, it's a huge part of the industry. It has been for the past decade or so. It is probably the predominant genre as far as retail releases go. And I think part of it is just because it's an easy, accessible, genre. I also think partially because you don't have to model a main character, so it allows you to show up without better graphics because you have one thing to focus on.
Yeah. Something that Bungie knows very well.
Ayo. But yes, we are actually we are talking about Bungie. We are here because of Destiny, which comes out next Tuesday. September 9th, in case you're listening to this on a day that's not Friday, or
did
Saturday,
guys,
Sunday, or Monday.
So, did you guys see, like, the live-action trailer that they put out today?
No. I don't do live-action trailers.
Like, it looks kind of obnoxious, I guess. So basically, it's like, you know how, like, in E3 they have, like, those presentations where the presenters do, like, that gamer lingo, stuff like that?
Yes. There's actually a good example of that in the Bayonetta 2 Nintendo Direct earlier.
It's like that, but a little bit more bro-y, but also there's a chick, or a girl, and they had some rock song, I don't remember, but it was basically just like a montage of these three, like, guardians, the in-game characters for Destiny, just, like, going around to, like, Venus, Mars, and stuff like that, and it just sounded kind of douchey and obnoxious.
So it was good.
I mean, the commercial is it didn't make me less excited for the game. It was just like kind of weird. It's like if the live action Call of Duty commercials were written by a tool.
They probably are. I've seen them.
I mean, a bigger tool.
But what was I going to say? Oh, I was so happy, or I should say, I think Bungie and Activision were smart to get Destiny out in front of us with the alpha and beta over the summer, because, based on what they've been doing to push it, I honestly wouldn't buy the game if I didn't know it was already good, because the commercial for it, not the CG, not the live action trailer, but the actual commercial, really doesn't sell this game as anything special. It looks ultra generic.
Which one is that?
Like the commercial for it. I've seen it on TV a couple of times. It has nothing memorable.
Is that the one with the guy from Breaking Bad who's, like, narrating to his kid?
No.
About...
No.
Okay. Well, in that case, I don't think I've seen this one then.
I'm going to try to find it, but yeah, that and then the thing that came out this week that it's not. I believe it's not coming out. Review copies aren't going out until Monday of next week.
That's kind of...
It's Mostly because that usually only happens with games that they think aren't going to do well critically.
Right.
And so they want to sort of hide them. But considering this is Bungie and they usually don't worry about that, it's possible they could be doing it sort of the same way that StarCraft 2 and Diablo 3 weren't playable for review until launch, and that they sort of understand that this is a very much an online social experience, and they want to make sure the press has the sort of ideal situation to play it in order to get the best possible impression.
Nobody wants to be SimCity.
Yeah, like I said, if not for the fact that we didn't have the beta and the alpha, which already honestly speaking, being able to play the game for yourself and, you know, form those opinions is much more important than any review could ever be. But honestly, after that, so the past month or so, the way they've been treating it, it just feels like it's any other game coming out. But I do really feel like it's something, I don't want to say it's game-changing, I don't want to say it's groundbreaking, but I do think it's really fun.
Yeah,
and that's all you can ask for this day and age.
I guess the best way to say it is that it could possibly change some things, maybe, if done right.
I feel like it doesn't do too much different.
Well, I mean, as far as how people, I'm not entirely sure like how I'm trying to say this, but it definitely feels like it's more than just a shooter. Also, kind of feels like an MMO. It's something that they're putting a lot more. It's like time into, if that makes sense.
I guess we'll see. Because I mean, right now, I guess part of it is because a lot of people just kind of able with a bunch of different things. It's an MMO FPS. It's a I honestly don't feel like it's an MMO, but some of the stuff is MMO light ish, like the strike and raid missions.
You do third person whenever you're like in the hub town, and this is a weird thing too. The cursor makes it feel like it should be a PC game.
Yeah, I hope they change that for launch, because like I feel like it would make sense if it was faster.
PC game.
But yeah, it seems to be more cumbersome because it doesn't necessarily always
slow.
Snap into place. Yeah, it doesn't snap into place, and it doesn't seem like there's any real advantage to it. It's a strange setup, but again, it's a minor thing. So we shall see. But this isn't the Destiny cast. Destiny is out next week, and we all had a chance to play it. But this is the first person shooter cast
anyway.
Have you not played it, James?
No, I'm not a console with online access, so I'm just sort of staring at it going, that might be something I want.
Wait, what consoles do you own that they don't have?
I have a 360, but I don't have an Xbox Live subscription. So.
Okay.
Which you needed to...
Yeah, same as PS4 and Xbox One, so... Maybe when I go over to 8th Gen...
One day.
Yeah, in 2029. Okay, so let's talk first-person shooters. Let's talk the genre in gaming.
All right, should we start with like personally, what was our first-person shooters, or where they started, and what they've become now?
Well, I mean, I feel like both are just really wide. Topics, because if you say first-person shooter, you think about stuff like, you know, like Doom and Wolfenstein, but then some people talk about, GoldenEye and stuff like that, which kind of really made it a genre on the console, and Halo, which really kind of cemented it as the genre on consoles. I guess what were your first experiences with it?
God, I think mine was, pretty sure it was Time Splitters 2, actually. Which is a great game, by the way, if you haven't played it. Which pretty sure no one has, because that franchise hasn't, like, done anything since 2007, or thereabouts. And then, I played Halo 2 when my cousin brought it and his Xbox over to my house one time. We just blazed through the campaign on co-op and did some multiplayer.
Okay. What about you, James?
I feel like I want to say it was GoldenEye, but I'm pretty sure it actually might have been later with one of the GameCube-era Pong games. I think it was Agent Under Fire was the one. I'm pretty sure that was sort of my first introduction, which sort of became a mainstay among my friends of our split-screen games, sort of pairing that alongside Smash Brothers and a couple others as our main rotation of multiplayer suite.
Fair enough. And I am going to semi-cheat. I mean, my first one was actually Turok on the N64. But I didn't play, because, I mean, as much as people like to talk about how great some of the N64 shooters were, I hated the controller for some of them, because, I mean, in hindsight, those C buttons were not a replacement for a second analog stick at all. I don't care what anybody says, and it was always kind of confusing for me to use. And I was also going to say my other one would have been GoldenEye, and it's the same issue. I honestly didn't know you could move with the C button, like strafe and stuff like that, until way after, like when I played Halo on the Xbox, and I really understood what the second buttons were. So it was always just kind of me going in a straight line or whatever with the analog stick, never actually strafing and moving around people.
So is GoldenEye legitimately good, or is it just like nostalgia?
I think part of it does have to put in context where, yes, by the standards of shooters at the time, it was good, and more importantly, like, a lot of the stuff it did with, like, still feels very fresh to this day, since it was one of the first shooters to really move away from making levels just about kill everything, get to the end, collect the key cards, and sort of moving towards actual objectives and some semblance of story structure. Like, it's one where I, like, unless you're looking to sort of poke into history and are willing to put up with a dated checkpoint and control systems, I wouldn't necessarily recommend. But, yeah, I think, yeah, if you put into the context of 97, then, yeah, it is ballin'.
I also think that it does stuff that I think a lot of shooters either have done away with or just probably don't pay attention to as much anymore, and I would like to see that. I'm thinking, like James kind of mentioned, not necessarily the checkpoints, but kind of the rolling objectives, where you kind of got multiple objectives based on the difficulty, and you didn't necessarily have to complete them all, but you got bonus points for completing certain ones and finding sequence. So it made the levels more kind of robust in the IV instead of like, oh, this is your objective, you get to that point. Like it was
like,
more.
This is your next objective. Now this one. Just like check.
Well, it was more that they like have the main objective of, hey, you have to get to the level, and then if you added the higher difficulties, then they'd also be like, oh, you also have to install this spy camera on the helicopter or hack this satellite or whatnot.
Yeah, so it was more like, oh, there's other stuff to do in the level that it's gonna take you out of the way, but it's like if you know it's there, it's well hidden. But it's like, okay, we're gonna give you more things to do. So instead of making the game more difficult, like it was still the same thing where enemies did more damage and there was just health found on the maps, but it was also like you had to do other stuff.
It's one where even if it is clumsy by modern standards, it's one that still feels remarkably fresh and novel in ways that a lot of modern shooters sort of aren't.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I think one of the bigger things, which in hindsight is more fun than practical, is also that the fact that they don't limit the amount of weapons you can carry. That's become a big staple of the first person genre.
That's why I like Resistance 3, because you can carry as many weapons as you want.
Like, I was surprised as hell when Destiny allowed you a third weapon. I didn't even know it was... Like, I honestly thought you had two weapons. So, like, your... What is it? Heavy weapon?
Yeah, it's like your rifle, and then your heavy weapon, and your special weapon. Apparently, for some stupid reason, I guess, like, your special weapons share ammo.
Well, yeah. I mean, that makes sense, though.
Yeah, I think one recent one I really liked, that Titanfall basically set that your weapon limit was you get your main weapon, so like your shotgun or your rifle or whatnot, and then your sidearm pistol, and then you get some sort of like explosive anti-Titan weapon. And partially that was due to sort of building that design around the specific Titan-based Titan versus pilot combat in the game, but it very much did overwhelmingly serve the game in its favor.
But yeah, it was.
I don't like it when shooters like have that sort of like, you know, well, then you're like it's like side weapon, like a shotgun or something, then a grenade, then a pistol.
Why not?
I don't know. I think it's
wait. Are you saying? Like, are you saying like a grenade as a weapon?
No. I'm saying I don't like it when you have like another gun and then you have a pistol, like that three weapon system that something like Killzone or I guess Gears of War has.
I like Gears of War system because Gears of War gives you. I mean, it's kind of like Destiny. Gears of War gives you more freedom, but it's like you have to have a pistol as one of your weapons, and then the other two are up to you.
I guess my thing is I don't find pistols particularly useful, especially like when they're not like submachine.
Well, it's more that they sort of leave it as like your extra backup.
Yeah, anyway. I always feel like pistols are kind of. Granted, I like pistols because they don't pack power, but they do tend to give you decent accuracy across a distance. Which I mean, other than like it's usually as far as like range, it's usually go sniper, then probably pistols, then like assault rifles and SMGs, which are just terrible. I hate SMGs in games because I honestly, the only reason you would ever use it if you can't shoot at anything and you just like to hold down the trigger button. Because those things have no type of accuracy whatsoever in any game, and they tend to have the worst recoil ever.
They're basically the close range weapon for people who aren't confident enough to use a shotgun.
Yes. Speaking of close range weapons, something I do miss from the GoldenEye in Perfect Dark days. A lot of shooters don't allow you to go unarmed anymore.
That was actually one thing I really liked about Black Ops 2's multiplayer setup was sort of the pick 10 system, was that you could forgo guns altogether and just put all your points into getting extra perks to just run around like a maniac with a knife. I always support games that allow for super novel and quote-unquote gimmicky strategies, but I really legitimately enjoyed playing around with a game like that.
But why would you want to like run around in multiplayer games specifically? Why would you want to do?
Basically, it's the extra challenge to try and force yourself to be successful within that model.
And I mean, I guess going back to the GoldenEye and Perfect Dark, the whole idea in that was everybody was that way, so it became more of a test of just kind of trying to engage in battle, and you get some really goofy ones because you can only engage in close combat. It's not like somebody can throw something at you. Except for Odd Job. But yeah, I mean, that was the fun of it. I mean, I kind of the same way in Halo. Like, whenever you have, like, that specialty mode where it's like you get a sniper and you get a shotgun, I never use the sniper. I usually just take the shotgun and I either shotgun you or beat you down because most people, when they snipe, tend to stay zoomed in and don't pay attention to people around them. So yeah, I love doing that. So yeah, I mean, in theory, I love beating people down more than I like shooting them because there's something very satisfying about running up to somebody and whacking them with your gun.
Says the sociopath.
How is that? I don't know how either options are, don't make you a sociopath.
You like to get your hands a lot more dirtier, like the feet, whatever.
So killing a bunch of people with guns make you less of a sociopath because you don't get your hands dirty.
I feel like some sociopaths will like relish like the feeling of like someone's flesh against their fist.
Well, it's not flesh against my fist. I just said I do miss. I guess in general, and this will go with the Perfect Dark and Time Splinter design as well. I miss when shooters were goofy and had fun with their ideas. And we've kind of hit this peak, and we're kind of going back on the other end of it now this year, especially. But for a long time, shooters they tried to get more and more realistic and more grounded, which is why you started carrying two weapons. It's why you started having these very war-driven narratives, and you didn't get.
Sorry.
Are you done? And you didn't get stuff like the laptop gun from Perfect Dark, or you didn't get something like a monkey wielding Uzis like in Time Splitters. And you don't really get games like that anymore. I think the closest thing we have on the market right now is Plants vs. Zombies Garden Warfare.
Yeah, and I suppose in a similar note, I guess sort of the influence of genres crossing over, I guess Borderlands would sort of fit that niche. And that it went from a game that was going to have a very typical Apocalypse art style to one more cartoony, and I would assume that was part of what led to its massive popularity.
Because it just looked like so massively different from everything else. And I think they've had like a pretty quick turnaround on that too. I think they said something like it only took them about 3 months or so to make that change.
Yeah, I actually never seen the original Borderlands until like a year after it came out.
Oh, it looks like. Literally generic as hell.
If that game had come out, I don't think anybody. I think it would have just come out with no fanfare whatsoever and disappeared just as quickly. And I think the other thing is not only did they change the art style, but the art style also fits with their tone. It's a very goofy game. It doesn't try to be earnest. It's just extremely goofy and silly with its story and its characters and its setting and its world and its guns, which only gets even more insane with the second one.
Yeah, I love the sarcastic sniper rifle.
But
you're not even trying.
Yeah, I think another example of a shooter that converted from a more realistic art style to one that more cartoony was Team Fortress 2, which I mean was one of those games that was in development for years. It was the Kingdom Hearts 3 of its day, and sort of the we are never going to get this, and then it basically looked very similar to a Counter-Strike sort of design, but then they went for this sort of Norman Rockwell-inspired cartoony look, where you can see a character from across the map, and even if you didn't know their colors, just from their silhouette, you can instantly recognize, oh, that's a heavy, oh, that's a sniper, oh, that's a pyro. So it's what one where the art style, like combined with the strong team gameplay, actually made the game significantly better and more fun to play.
See, now I'm confused, because I was going to say, the only thing is, isn't TF2 third person, or am I just... No, it's first person, right?
It's first person.
Okay, yeah, I'm just... Yeah, but yeah, that's another good one, and that's one that actually kind of encourages teamwork, which is a game... I think a first-person shooter's miss out on nowadays is you have team modes, but they don't often encourage teamwork.
No, it just, like, encourage you to have, like, people who can possibly... who, like, you can either steal kills from or can, like, who clean up your kills for you.
I think it's sort of part of the downside to make playing a game online easier. Like before, when you would have to actually find a specific group of people in order to play with, you would know who those people were, and you would already be actively, like, working towards team cooperation. But when you're just meeting up with a bunch of random people on Xbox Live for Battlefield, even when the only way to win is to complete objectives, you're still going to have a lot of people who are just trying to lone wolf gun it through.
Oh my god, conquest with randoms on Battlefield was basically a nightmare.
Yeah, it's always weird, because not only that, but you also have those people who probably either know what they're doing or they don't care, so they go into objective-based modes and they just kind of kill people. Because they know everybody else is going to be doing an objective, so it's kind of like you just have them funneling into one position, and you just kind of mark that, because nobody's paying attention to where you are, because, like, you want to capture the flag, you want to capture the base, so it's like, oh, I'm just gonna camp out here and wait for these people to come into my dead zone. And that drives me up the wall.
And I think part of the way that Team Fortress encourages it is that there is no way to win through kills. Like, in Battlefield, capturing the points is important to winning, but you can do it just by killing everyone. In Counter-Strike, yes, there are objectives you need to get, but you can win just by wiping out the other team. In Team Fortress, the only way you're winning is by pushing that cart to the end, capturing the briefcase, controlling all the points. It's one where the only way to win is through killing, is through completing the objectives. So it basically does force people in order to complete them. Combined with, like, 9 classes that are all, like, incredibly distinct and singular. Like, there isn't a generic just, hey, this class is just the bland everyman class. Like, every single one of them is very specifically designed for a set of skills, and they all work together really well alongside each other for probably my favorite multiplayer shooter.
Yes. I wouldn't say my favorite because, sadly enough, I was one of the people who bought it on the 360, and that never got the support that it got on the PC. Even though I do also have the PC version, I don't play PC games that often.
Yeah. It's one that definitely benefited on the PC from the ability to be constantly updating and adding content to the point where, I mean, especially when you consider the co-op mode they added a year or two ago, it's practically a sequel at this point. Like, at least in terms of updates, it has definitely had more than enough updates to qualify as a sequel, considering how much things get added in some studios' follow-ups.
Yeah, but it's a really fun game, a cast base, which is something, a very distinct cast, because a lot of games it's just like, oh, your cast base just means you have a sniper or you have an assault rifle. This is like, no, you have completely unique skills, and most of the times you need them. Like, you aren't going to get far if your team's all pyros or if your team's all heavies. You need your scouts, you need your medics, you need your
offensive engineers.
Yeah. You need your heavies, you need your spies, you need your snipers. You
need your counter spies.
You need your counter spies.
That's the pyro's job.
Yeah, it is. I used to have us pyro in front of you'd have pyros in front of any entrance, so when anybody came through, you just kind of sprayed a fire, just in case. But yeah, no, a fantastic, fantastic, extremely fun game. We kind of hit the big ones. I mean, we haven't really talked about Call of Duty, but I feel like talking about Battlefield, we talked about Call of Duty. And I don't mean that in a disparaging way. I just mean that there isn't a ton. Like, Medal of Honor, Battlefield, and Call of Duty all kind of are the same class of shooter.
Kind of? Like, I don't have much to say on Medal of Honor here, but I feel like if you compare the best aspects of Call of Duty and Battlefield, there is enough of a difference. Like, sure, they share the same aesthetic palette, but yeah, Battlefield very much emphasizes the large-scale, team-focused, theoretically team-focused battles in the multiplayer, where Call of Duty is much more the more arcadey run-and-gun thing, which is especially odd contrasted with, say, like the campaign of the first Modern Warfare, which actually has a relatively functional, mature tone. Like, it actually handles the politics of that area reasonably well, and basically does sort of point out the irony of Modern Warfare, and that the game is not actually about direct warfare between two big nations in that sense, because it understands, hey, you know what happens when you know what would happen if we did that? We would nuke each other, and fucking everybody would die. Like, that's why the main thrust of the later acts of the game is preventing an actual war from breaking out, which is why it's sort of disappointing that they go again, that they basically flip that over completely in the sequel. They're like, no, we want Russia to invade the Eastern Seaboard.
Yeah. Which still makes no sense. It just makes no sense in any like sense of logic.
Yeah, it's also kind of I do enjoy the earlier Call of Duties 2, 3, and even kind of 4, but it seems like the more they became popular, the more they just kind of went, we have to keep this popular, so we're just gonna go more and more batshit insane. Yep. Which works sometimes, I think it's Black Ops that has the presidential mode?
Zombie
mode fighting as
JFK,
John F. Kennedy,
right?
Richard Nixon, Robert McNamara, and Fidel Castro.
And then
Call of Duty Ghost has like, oh, the entire like United States is under siege because like all of South America banded together and hijacked their orbital nuclear satellite.
I was also gonna say, is Ghost the one that has like the horde mode with aliens?
Yes,
I think so.
Yep,
and that was the one that also got Predator DLC at some point, right?
And I think it might have had Snoop Dogg DLC too.
It had Snoop Dogg and also had a Halloween with Michael Myers.
So yes, at some point they just decided to, what the hell, nobody cares about the plot.
I'm kind of, because it looks like Call of Duty like had a baby with Titanfall.
Well, I think it seems like that seems to be the theme of this year, not Titanfall and Call of Duty having a baby, but it does seem like
X Game had a baby with X Game to create Game Z.
Well, yeah, that more like we're kind of going back, we're kind of hitting the point where, again, we're coming out the other end, where we're going to more unrealistic shooters. You have stuff like Titanfall, which it's kind of a Call of Duty, but you have giant mechs, and it's a lot more fast-paced and a lot more vertical. Destiny is very similar as well. You have superpowers, you have special weapons.
You have Peter Dinklage.
You have Peter Dinklage.
You have wizards from the moon.
Call of Duty is a lot more futuristic. You get all these whiz-bang gadgetries and stuff like that.
Also, apparently the Call of Duty guys for this one, like, quote-unquote, consulted with, like, actual people for this.
And yes,
apparently, like people who specialize in like either PMCs or like advanced warfare or something.
I feel like they always do that at a certain level or another. They always have some kind of consulting with experts.
Yeah, but I think you're trying to say that's how they're excusing some of the sci-fi stuff about it.
And yeah,
I'm,
it's like I just for some reason I just do not buy that.
Well, I was going to give you two words: invisible car, because.
Wait, there's an invisible car in Call of Duty?
No, not
in Call
of Duty. Not in Advanced Warfare. In Die Another Day. Its car turns invisible. And according to them, at the time, that was something that they were looking into doing.
Why, though?
But that's my point. Just because somebody's looking into doing something doesn't mean it's going to become a reality or become practical at any point.
Right. So what's the practicality of an invisible car?
Well, yeah, you would think, if anything, an invisible car would be a terrible idea. Because can you imagine how many accidents will happen when nobody can see your car on the road?
Can you imagine, like, how many, I guess, the only type of people who would use that would be, like, parking tickets. Like, people who want to avoid parking tickets.
But then,
and even then, that would be ruined because, like, someone would say, like, oh, it's an empty parking space, and then they, ram into a car.
Yeah, there's so many practical problems with that. Somebody could try to park and ram into your car. Like, I imagine somebody's going to create anti-invisible car technology so cops can see it and still ticket you.
I feel like anti-invisible technology would just be, like, a paint gun or something.
Basically,
but that's gonna be weird, just kind
of like a bunch of 14-year-olds just like run around a parking lot, just like throwing cans of paint on everything that looks like anything that looks empty. That's the future.
Yeah,
so,
but yeah, like I said, just because something is possible doesn't mean we need to necessarily embrace it, and I think some of what Call of Duty is doing. I'm curious to see how it works in multiplayer, because a lot of it seems like it can be game-breaking.
I mean, isn't Call of Duty just basically game-breaking itself by this point?
Well, I mean, I don't play it intensely enough, but I do, a lot of people do say it's kind of balanced and stuff like that, so I guess that works out. But yes, we spent way too much time on Call of Duty.
we could talk about Battlefield for a bit. A little bit more.
Well, let's talk about something else from this past generation, or even before that. What were some of your favorite off-the-wall shooters? Or shooters that had, like, really interesting hooks?
Like, not conventional?
Yes, that's like Singularity comes to mind, or... Time Shift?
What the fuck is Time? You're making that game up. There's no way that's a real game.
No, it was like this game where like Dennis Quaid was a scientist who went back in time and like fought Victorian era people or something like that. It was Time.
Holy crap! You didn't make that game up.
Wait, I was right. Yeah.
No. Time Shift is a real game.
Yeah. Why? If I'm gonna make something up, it's not gonna sound that generic.
I don't know if it has Dennis Quaid in it. The Wikipedia page doesn't say his name anywhere.
I think it has one of the Quaids in it. I don't know. IMDb it. But to answer your question, I think my favorite off the wall ones would be Bulletstorm.
That I still need to play. I actually I've owned it for like 4 years now.
Like,
it's sitting in my drawer unopened.
Okay, apparently they did afford Dennis Quaid for Time Shift.
They did afford
Which still looks like a made-up game.
Yes, it looks like a male Samus on the cover.
Yep. But
I'm just guessing from all these sevens that it got in reviews would mean it's probably available for $4 on eBay right now.
Nah, that's probably like $1.50.
Are you looking to buy it now?
No, I'm just curious how much it costs.
With James, we'll be back next week with his impressions of Time Shift.
We'll probably
can find it cheaper on Steam. But yeah, what were you saying, Justin?
Oh yeah, Bulletstorm. It's like a very funny and like pretty inventive game. I felt like it encourages you to like use different weapons to kill.
Yeah.
I think it's got a unique scoring system and like sense of humor.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think that overtook the game's marketing when it was coming out, and that kind of hurt it on its way out. It also kind of sucks when games like that doesn't get a chance to kind of, because it was rough around the edges from what I hear. It sounded like it needed a technical round to become a really good game.
A little bit. And I think part of the other problem is that it had the crackdown problem where it was overshadowed by like having the Gears 3 beta.
So it was, I see what you mean.
Yeah. It was a fun game, but the thing that like was with it got more hype than the actual game itself.
One of my favorites, and I know this is like my Alpha Protocol thing, where I know that it's rougher on the edges, but
you know it's not actually good, but you love it anyway.
Oh my god!
I think Alpha Protocol is really good.
Please say Clive Barker's Jericho.
No, I was going to say Geist, which was a GameCube game.
Holy shit, that did exist.
Do you think I'm making this stuff up?
No, I just only remembered that game just now. Like, I remember reading about it in Nintendo Power when it was first coming out, and then never hearing about it again.
Yeah, it was, basically, the idea of the game was that you were a ghost, and you had to inhabit people's bodies. And in order for you to do that, you'd have to scare them in some fashion. And
that sounds
kind of cool. Yeah, and the idea was like you would scare different people, and different people would have different attributes, and it wasn't all combat focused. Some people would just like they'd have a key card or they'd give you access to certain rooms and stuff like that. And then there'd be people who were like you'd get armed guards and stuff like that. And they even carried that gimmick over to the multiplayer, where like there was just a bunch of bodies around, and you basically just had to possess whoever had the weapon you wanted. So you wanted to possess the guy with the rocket launcher, or you wanted to possess the guy with the sniper, or possess the guy with the shotgun or something like that. It was a really interesting idea that I think would have benefited from a second game to really iron it out and make it something special. But it was on the GameCube and a mature game, so I'm sure
it sold 12 copies.
That's kind of cool. I'm interested in this.
Yeah, its Metacritic is 66, to kind of give you an idea of what you get it into. I guess on the subject of Nintendo and on first-person shooters, or first-person games, I would be remiss not to mention the Metroid Prime Trilogy.
Yeah, which is sort of part of the brand of things that aren't, like, fully shooters that sort of blend in other genres together.
And it turns it into a fantastic drink.
Oh yeah, Metroid Prime is fantastic, Metroid Prime 3 is fantastic, I never played Metroid Prime 2, but I'm assuming it's at least great.
It's good.
I like the multiplayer.
You're one of the few.
You are one of the...
Okay, to be fair, I played four-person couch multiplayer.
That's the only way you could play it, Dave, with no online for it.
Oh, alright, I don't know why people did not like it then.
I think part of it was because it was on like competitive shooters at the time, especially Halo 2, which I think was a big competition. Mm-hmm. And a lot of it deals with the fact that it's really weird to have a competitive shooter with the Archon technology. It's also weird to have a first-person shooter that can be unbalanced because you get different power-ups on the stage, and those power-ups would change your balance. Like you go faster, you'd get charge shots quick and stuff like that.
Isn't that what Unreal Tournament was?
Probably.
From what I remember playing of like some of Unreal Tournament 3, there were like these huge boosters where like you could run around fast. You had I think it was one for like a power for like 3x shields.
Yeah, but I still think the first problem would have been the biggest one, which is the Archon technology in a first person shooter. Because some people would kind of see that taking away the skill gap. There were ways to offset that in the dodging and all this other stuff, but... Mm-hmm. James said, fantastic trilogy. The only thing that I would say about 2 has one of my favorite gimmicks in any gaming, and I think this is the same problem I have with Borderlands, the pre-sequel.
The oxygen system?
Well, not necessarily the oxygen system, but any type of system where it's like... you'll be damaged by the environment or you'll be damaged by something out of your control. So it's like this.
Yeah, I don't like. I do not like. I don't get why that's like still a thing.
Well, I think a lot of people. I think people put it in their games because they think it would make it more difficult, which it does, but not in a fun way.
No, it's just like more annoying than anything else.
Yeah, it's tedious. It's like, oh, okay, I can only go this far because my spacesuit is going to take damage if I go out of this bubble. So it means I have to fight these enemies in a very specific manner.
Right. Or it's like, I don't think it really like gives you time to like explore, especially if like the game like rewards you for having like found a certain amount of collectibles in an environment.
Yeah. So yeah, it's the same thing I have with Borderlands the pre-sequel, where it's like, oh, you have this oxygen meter and you can use the oxygen for moves, but it depletes really quick and you'd have to replenish it. Like that doesn't sound fun at all to me. Like, what was wrong with the Borderlands core gameplay?
I think they're supposed to have like stations like, cause it like set up fairly frugally enough to where it really won't be an issue. Unless you're like, really traveling outside. That's what I think I heard. I'm not 100% sure on that. But still, I agree with you. It's like, there's no reason for it.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's the double-edged sword, though. Because if you have to be like, okay, we're going to set it up so it's like reasonable so you won't have to worry about it, then don't put it in. Because if that's your counter, it's like, oh, we're going to set it up so you don't have to worry about it, then it defeats the purpose of putting it in if it's
you just made more work for yourself.
Yeah, again, I feel like it's one of those things, and I assume it's the same thing with Metroid Prime 2, where it's like, okay, we want to do a sequel, we want to change it up, but how do we change it up? Let's introduce this gimmick that nobody's going to care about. And that's what they did. But yeah, what else do we have as far as, did we get an answer from James?
I guess for not necessarily like an off the wall one, but sort of unappreciated was Far Cry 2. I think is one that has a lot of really novel ideas that made it a very fresh feeling shooter with like the malaria system, and everything felt very unpredictable in a certain level the fast spreading fire and the malaria and the guns jamming and all those other elements that led it to a very unique feeling game, even if it was did feel slightly unpolished at times.
What was the malaria system? I never played Far Cry 2.
Basically, you have malaria, and occasionally you would have to pop pills, or you would die of malaria poisoning sickness.
So it's basically what you were talking about earlier, where it's like you have this system that like constantly takes down your health.
No, it's just that every once in a while it'll be like, hey, you need to take this pill. It's not like it's going to be something that's consistently taking you down. It's just occasional times it'll be like, hey, pop a pill, then you have to pop a pill.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, trying to think. I mean, it's
one of the, I guess, big ones we haven't talked about yet. BioShock, I suppose.
Isn't that anticipation? I think BioShock is less of a. I think it falls into the same camp as Metroid Prime, where it's less of a shooter and more of a first-person title.
Yeah, it's one where I think it definitely is like it's less adventure centric than something like Metroid Prime, but like it's very much far more leaning towards the shooter side, I think. And it's one where, I mean, even if you put out that it's a brilliant like critique of objectivism and sort of the use of narrative, like the idea of choice and person and freedom in video game narrative, like I think it's a very dynamic shooter in terms of everything feeling. Trying to fill out the right word to put the combat. It's one where you're very much, like, very strategy-based, and you have a lot, like, it definitely isn't just run and gun through this, it's sort of toy around and plan ahead for your fights.
Yeah, yeah. I was going to talk about the other Valve shooters. Not Half-Life, because...
Not Half-Life?
Well, I mean, we can talk about Half-Life, I just don't want to talk about people talking about Half-Life 3.
Okay, no, I was just going to talk about how Half-Life 2 is one of the best games ever made.
Yeah, can we move on?
I found it kind of boring, but that's just me.
I've never played Half-Life, but from what I hear, I'm not interested.
Shocking.
You should play Half-Life, but yes.
Positively shocking.
You're not into Half-Life either, shut up.
I know, but at least I tried it.
Well,
yeah, well, Okay, that's another topic that's unrelated to shooters. Okay, well, something else that you should try.
I mean, I've heard that Half-Life 2 is not as great as people have said it is.
Okay, that's the problem where that's gonna happen with everything. Like, for example, I do not like Fight Club nearly as much as most people. But I'm not going to tell someone, no, don't bother with Fight Club because I don't like it, even though it works for most people. Like it's one where I think if a certain piece of media does work for the majority of people, it's like unquestionably worth checking out.
Well, I mean to kind of counter that for Justin, though, I mean it is also kind of dated. It is what, a decade old?
Yeah, and
isn't it more than 2 decades?
It was 2004.
Half-Life 2.
Yeah. And I mean, it has been, like, 2 years or so since I last played it, but I'm, like, 90% sure it still, like, plays like a dream. Like, it's definitely one of the best pace shooters, like, both in terms of sort of the general tempo of the levels escalating and then escalating, crescendoing, and then cooling down nicely, as well as sort of the escalation of power across the entire game, where you basically go from just this one guy desperately shooting his way through to someone who's ultimately leading revolutionary armies.
Yeah, Justin. But yeah, I
won't go out of my way to like find a copy, buy it, and play it.
Well, I mean, if you shouldn't have to go out of your way. You should pick up the orange box, which is to me still one of the greatest deals in gaming history.
Do they still have that at GameStop?
Probably. I imagine it'd be no more than maybe $10. And granted, the PS3 version does have pretty prominent load times. It's still pretty. Like they're like the worst game in that package is like maybe Half-Life 2 Episode 1, or I guess the console version of Team Fortress, and it's still pretty damn good.
Yeah, and that's the thing. I more than likely wouldn't play it on PC. So.
Well, yeah, but it's still one of the best packages in gaming. And like I was saying, one of those games included on that is Portal,
Portal's a fun game.
Yeah.
Portal's terrific.
Another fun little, I don't want to say anti, but a different take on the first-person shooter genre.
Yeah, sort of basically building a puzzle game out of it more than really a shooter.
Yeah, and there's no real combat. Even though you do have some enemy encounters, that's usually kind of handled in a puzzling manner.
Yeah. It has definitely like one of the more like sharply written shooters.
Yeah, like, it's one where it's short at only about 3 hours or so, but it doesn't feel like anything's missing or like it should be longer anyways. It's one that slowly but surely builds up to a perfect climactic punchline.
It's actually kind of funny because, fine, it's the opposite.
A bit more than kind of funny. It's actually really funny.
Well, no, I bet like, that was because usually when you have a game, people are afraid it has too little content. Where I think Portal 2 had the opposite problem, where people were afraid that it would be too long and stretched out,
compared to
the original. I actually like Portal
2. I think there are certain parts in the Cave Johnson basement sections that go on too long, but like on the whole, I think it still worked. Almost as well, pacing-wise.
I feel like the game itself drags on, and it sort of like has this problem where you're like searching around for like where you can like put the portal.
Yeah, I think that's fair in certain chunks.
Mm-hmm. Like, I think it was like chapter 5 or 6 specifically. I think it was also the Cave Johnson bit where you're talking.
Yeah,
in
the sub basement areas. So I got you.
Yeah, and there's something about. I did play a co-op, but like, there's something about the gels in that game that just kind of felt.
Doesn't gel with you.
You walked into that one, Justin.
I
can't be mad.
I'm not mad. I'm just disappointed that I didn't stop myself.
But yeah, I actually thought co-op was the best part of that game.
Yeah, I didn't play all the co-op, but I played like several acts of it or so, and it was really, really terrific.
I hear that co-op is like a very. Like, co-op in that game is, like, very frustrating.
Only if you have shitty friends.
Yeah, I was gonna say, I think it's a type of co-op that you need to play with friends and not necessarily strangers.
Well, not even that. It's like, you and your friend need to be, like, on the same page.
Yeah, which is why you have to play with a friend and not a stranger.
Yeah, that's part of why I think it's one of the best co-op games, is that it very much, like cooperation is required. Like, you could theoretically get through something like Halo or Borderlands with you just all being shooting at generally the same enemies. And not really cooperating, but Portal is one where the cooperation part of co-op is very much emphasized, and I think that's why it sings.
Yeah, but yeah, and I also think there's something. I mean, I always said my favorite type of moments in gaming are always those aha moments, those moments where you're on something, and then the solution kind of hits you in the face, which is one of the reasons I love the Zelda games and why Portal and why.
I feel like that's something that kind of took me away from Portal 2. Like, I feel like that's part of what also made it feel stressed out, because there were moments where I was, like, legitimately scratching my head trying to figure out what to do. And by the time I realized that, I just felt kind of, I felt like kind of defeated. I'm just like, oh, duh. Not like in a good way either.
Well, I guess it depends on the type of person you are, because usually when I see it and it's like, oh, that was the solution. I should, like, you look at it and like, oh, I should have figured this out from the get-go.
Yeah, it's very rare that, like, it definitely, like, there's occasional times where I think there's actively bad puzzle design. Like, I'm playing through the first Crystal Lake right now, and most of them are good, but there are a couple of them where it's like, really, how was I expected to think of that? But I think Portal, like, there was only one part where I was stuck for, like, an extended period of time, and it was one when I clicked, I was like, oh, right, I'm forgetting this really basic game mechanic.
Yeah, I will say there were a few in Portal 2 that I thought were cheap. They were like, it wasn't necessary, oh, you figured this puzzle out. It was more like, you have to have pixel perfect accuracy for a portal placement to get it just right.
It was also the sub-base set where it's like, there's that giant O sign, and you had to aim it at a specific direction. That way,
yeah,
that one was kind of annoying.
Yeah,
it was very annoying.
But yeah, I mean, I'm talking about the cooperation nature of it, I was also going to bring up Left 4 Dead, which is another. I mean, it's literally a co-op game, so you need to cooperate. But that's another different type of shooter. That's really fun if you're into that.
I am into that. I do love me Left 4 Dead. It is pretty great. Like, even if you only have one, like, specific friend you're playing with, it is pretty fucking great to be like, me and my friend over the, like, 2 summers ago, we just cleared through every single campaign in the first 2 games since on the PC version they actually just gave the campaigns from the first one over to people who own 2, so you could play through them with all the additions of 2, like the new weapons and other extra super zombies.
I think like Left 4 Dead has its moments, but I kind of feel like after a while it sort of falls into a routine, even with like the sort of randomized elements.
Yeah, I do agree that I think the random elements of Director are slightly overstated. That's why after a certain, like after a few playthroughs of the campaign, I mostly move over to versus mode, where having the human players control the super zombies and then being able to play as them sort of freshened it up nicely.
Yeah, I think humans are always gone, and it's one of the reasons I am not, it's one of the reasons I'm really kind of questioning Evolve, because even something like Left 4 Dead, I do think kind of gets old. Like, I enjoyed Left 4 Dead, and I bought Left 4 Dead 2 when it came out, and I enjoyed Left 4 Dead 2, but at some point during that, I also realized, like, I'm just playing more Left 4 Dead, and no matter how interesting the human opponents are, it is kind of, it's pretty much the same strategy after a while. Because there's only so much you can do in the environment as any on either side of the table.
Yeah, that's part of why I think games like Team Fortress 2 sort of benefit from being able to frequently update, since they can add new content with modes and maps and different items that can change up the general meta of the game and keep things from becoming, okay, yeah, this is still great, but I'm also still playing the same Counter-Strike.
Yeah. But going back to what you're saying with Evolve, I'm kind of wondering how they're going to avoid that with the one player who's going to be able to, like, control the environment, because what's stopping them from unleashing, like, the biggest enemies in their belt? We were kind of talking about, like, shooters with sort of randomized elements, and it had me thinking of Payday 2. A game which has, like, is like this initial concept of like, oh, you're going to rob a bank, you're going to rob a club, you're going to like cook meth, and then the elements are completely randomized. So it's like one moment you're, you know, busting up like this entire jewelry store, nabbing all the jewels, and then next there's like cops and SWAT and helicopters outside, and you have to like make it to the safe zone in a certain amount of time, or do whatever you can, or like, you know, take hostages or anything really.
Yeah, yeah, really fun game. I will say this much: at least on the console front, it's kind of tedious to level up.
It feels like you're leveling up like slower than you actually are.
You are, because they have too many systems in place that interact with each other, and they don't give you enough to count. Because in order for you to level up your character, you need experience points, which you get every time you level up. You need money, but then you also need a certain amount of stuff in previous levels to get to the next level. So it's not even like you can put all your points here and then move up. It's like, oh, you have to spend this amount of money and this amount of points before you can get stuff in tier 2. And it's like, okay, but then you also have to spend money for equipment. You have to buy guns. You have to buy masks. You have to buy add-ons for your guns. And it's like, yeah, at some point...
You get charged for hostages. You get charged for, like, hostage kills. You get charged for, like, you get money sent to your offshore account. The rest of the money goes somewhere.
Yeah, I still don't know what your offshore account does.
I don't know. Me too. Like, do we have, like, are there people that we pay that, like, take the offshore account too? Like, why would we use the offshore account?
Well, I don't know.
I mean, as far as I can tell, like, we're still in America, so, and no one...
Well, no, I mean, even in the game, I don't know what your offshore account does. Like, it's money that you earn, but I don't think you get to use it.
Is it supposed to be, like, maybe it was, like, holding money in case you do, like, actually run out of money when you're spending it in the game somehow?
That doesn't make any...
I don't know.
I have no idea.
I don't know, dude.
But I guess to kind of switch focus from actually talking about first-person shooters, what are some of your favorite weapons in shooters?
Far Cry 3, a bow and arrow.
Far Cry 2, flamethrower. Mostly because of the fast spreading fire effects.
Oh, dude. Fire travels so fast in Far Cry.
Yeah.
Also,
and I'm psychopath here.
Well, also, the energy sword in Halo is one of the better melee weapons in shooters.
I think in recent time they've found
it's overpowered, yes, but it's still a great weapon.
Yeah, they've balanced it more in recent years because there's more than one on the map. But when it was first introduced, that weapon was brutal. I'm a fan of the Cerebral Boar from Turok. I believe that was the one that went into your head and blew up.
That's kind of awesome.
Yes, I've mentioned it before, the laptop gun, and I'm actually a fan of any automatic gun, really.
Wait, did you say the laptop?
The laptop. It's a gun that you could place on like a wall. It was basically a portable turret, which is what we get nowadays.
Yeah, like part of the fun of Perfect Dark was that every gun had a secondary fire, and for some of them, just because it was early in the design of shooters and things were different, like some of them were like, oh, you can whack people with it, or this one has a scope you can look through. But then there was stuff like the laptop gun, and I think there was one that you could toss the clips as an explosive. And one of my favorite weapons was one where you could, it was like an X-ray sniper rifle, and it would actually lock onto enemies through the walls so you could hit them with that. And it was actually, embarrassingly overpowered, but, oh, I love it so much.
That also reminds me of two weapons. One of them is, in Borderlands 2, this thing called the Bane. It's like this really loud submachine gun. Like, when you wear it, it moves slow, and when you shoot it, it does, like, this really annoying screaming sound.
You know what? The first time I used that weapon, I didn't know it was the gun that made that sound effect,
I thought it was just some random enemy.
Yeah, I kept looking around to see where the enemy was coming from. Like, okay, I stopped shooting, and it's really quiet now.
Right.
And then I started shooting, and it's the gun that's making this annoying sound.
It's like, I really wish that you could just, like, tweak the setting on that to shut it off or something.
I guess that's the point.
Yeah, and I guess the other weapon was the auger from Resistance, because, like, it's all fire would allow you to, like, shoot through walls and lock on to people.
Yeah, I think there's also a gun in Perfect Dark that lets you shoot through walls. And, I mean, I think that's something Call of Duty does now as well.
Yeah,
Call of Duty sort of evolved out of the Counter-Strike model, where if your weapon was powerful enough and the wall was thin enough, the bullets would actually go through it. It's like you could shoot through a wooden wall with an automatic weapon pretty easily.
Yeah, Which makes sense. Yeah. It sucks that Ratchet and Clank doesn't count because they have some amazing weapons.
Dude, Ratchet like, has some of like the best weapons, like the plasma coil and the Sheepinator.
Yes. What's the robot that fights with you? Mr.
Zircon?
Yeah, Zircon.
Mr. Zircon.
I mean, this isn't
Into the Nexus, he... Go on.
Oh, I was going to say, this doesn't... I mean, it's not anything special. I just really thought it was cool. Especially being that I'm a fan of like, that era. Yeah. But I like that time finish allowed you to do with Tommy guns. More games to allow you to do that.
That's one of my favorite parts about Halo is like being able to dual wield different weapons. I wonder why they took that out.
Probably for balancing reasons.
Yeah.
I mean,
it's one where I think.
They could work on other things for balancing reasons, like you know the shotgun.
I don't have any problem with the Halo shotgun.
The shotgun is kind of ridiculously overpowered.
Yeah, I think the balancing in Halo with the shotgun is that the multiplayer for Halo has always been very. Mobile and open, like it's almost always in very wide environments, so you have to actually be able to get close enough to someone.
Yeah,
to hit
them
with it.
It makes sense that a shotgun one hit KOs you and kills range, but like, if you're trying to shoot a person from anything that's not right in front of you, a shotgun kind of sucks. I always find it weird when games have shotguns that can like. Kill you from halfway across the map. Well, not literally halfway across the map.
You can just say Call of Duty shotguns.
I was gonna say Gears of War. The first Gears of War, the shotgun was the weapon.
The shotgun in Gears of War 1 and the sawed-off in Gears of War 3. Those are both. They're both like massively overpowered.
Yeah, the worst thing, worst or best thing about the shotgun in Gears, you didn't have to aim it. Like, you hit somebody in the general area.
It would still get them.
Yeah, that was pretty, like, you just rolled into somebody with a shotgun, poof. That was
like,
a KO.
Yeah, you just, like, blow half their face off.
Yes. And that's why usually when it became one-on-one, it just became a rolling match as people rolled in past each other.
I remember there's like this one match where like they were literally just like rolling and shooting like every other time. So like one person would roll, the other person would shoot, the other person would shoot. It just like it was like this whole like merry-go-round of like roll and shoot.
Yeah, that's how you have to fix it. Another thing that a lot of games don't do anymore with weapons is like mime. Like, we don't get, like, GoldenEye Perfect Dark Times, and it's a cost game from the same, but they had remote, they have proximity, and they had, timed. And that was always fun. I mean, Halo kind of does that with the, they have, like, not the grenade launcher, but they have, like, grenade launcher.
I know what you're talking about.
Sticky bomb launcher, I think, where you can remote
grenade
it. Yeah, that one. And, Gears of War kind of does that, like, you can plant grenades.
Yeah. Which I used to have.
Dude, that was great with the flame grenades or the ink one. The ink one. Those were pretty fast.
They're my favorite ones, because it had ridiculous knockback, was the smoke grenades in Gears of War 2.
What was the purpose of, like, planting a smoke grenade, honestly?
The only reason I ever planted a smoke grenade was because I didn't want to use up actual grenades. And, like I said, it had such insane range. That it would just be like an alert that somebody's coming and they get knocked back so you can run up to them and shotgun them before they got up.
Right. I remember in Gears of War 1 and 3, where it's like you had to use your grenades to like close the holes when the locusts were popping out.
I also believe that there was an achievement in Gears of War 2 for tagging somebody when you were down with a smoke grenade.
Yeah, I think you have to do it like 10 or 20 times.
Which was really special, because that meant the person came up to you and you had a smoke grenade.
That's super risky, though.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it depends, because there's also a mode in Gears of War. Okay, we're going to stop, because Gears of War isn't a first-person shooter.
Yeah, ooh, I just remembered, it's a weapon from another shooter that sort of is more so another genre. In Fallout 3, you could get Abraham Lincoln's rifle as a weapon.
That sounds awesome.
It was... Okay, actually, as a weapon, it was basically just a better version of this other semi-auto rifle. So it was a good gun, but not an amazing one, beyond the fact that you were using Abraham Lincoln's rifle And you could also wear Abraham Lincoln's hat.
Real quick, while we're talking about Fallout 3, how great is the VAT system?
It's kind of brilliant.
It's awesome. Like it, yes, it simplifies the game to where, like, you can basically just, like, you know, click one button and then just, like, select what parts and, you know, just, like, not care anymore. But it's also really, it's still, there's still, like, this great amount of joy that you get when you, like, watch someone's arm fly off in glorious slow motion.
Yeah, it's one where I think it definitely helped to bridge the RPG and shooter elements together.
If/slash when they do Fallout 4, I hope that makes, like, a return.
I imagine it will, because, I mean, okay, it was in New Vegas, but New Vegas was basically a Fallout 3, trying to think of the right way to put it. Not an expansion pack, but it's like a semi-sequel. So I guess sort of expansion, I guess.
Yeah.
But with more, yeah, with twice the content and twice the bugs.
Yeah. It's Bethesda.
Yeah. Okay. Well, Obsidian.
Final question as we begin to wrap, and I'm sure you probably already know what it is, but what is your favorite shooter of all time?
God,
single player, multiplayer, or either one?
Well, I mean, it's up to you.
I think I know. God, that's really hard.
Well, you had, we always end on what's your favorite whenever we do these type of shows.
Good point. So I guess single player wise, one of them would be Far Cry 3, just because of, like, its really organic sandbox nature and the sort of like this constantly, like, scaling sense of, like, being a badass.
And there's also a mission we get to burn down a field of marijuana.
And there's also a mission, this great sense of, like, satisfaction, like, when you're playing God, just, like, shooting an entire cage and watching an entire, like, rip open a bunch of people, or, like, blowing someone up as they step into your, like, step onto your, like, thing of C4. And then my other one would be probably Halo Reach, which I feel doesn't really, like, get a lot of credit.
I would agree that's certainly my favorite Halo game.
Yeah,
as far as campaign goes,
it's probably, like, it's definitely, like, in the top Halo. Because it's not bogged down by the story of the other three games. It definitely feels like a more personal feeling threat as you're trying to, like, fight this thing that you know is coming.
Yeah, this is, like, overwhelming sense of futility to it. Like, even if the characters are all very simple, there is this sense that, okay, we are not winning this fight. Our fight is basically to
do what we can.
Yeah. And that's why it has one of my favorite final missions in the game.
Yes,
just survive.
I was just gonna say that. I feel like it was really smart for Bungie, like, not just to have, like, the first shot in the game be, like, you know, the planet destroyed and your helmet, like, cracked on the ground, but also to, like, have you, like, actually play that moment. Because in a cutscene, I don't think it would have worked, like, had the significant impact that it does otherwise.
Yeah, it was a very novel setting too, because you could actually hold them off for a pretty long time.
Yeah, you actually can. It just depends on, like, how you play it and
what difficulty you run.
Yeah, true. But as far as, like, single player, Reach is, I feel like it's definitely the best, and I think the game as a whole deserves a lot more credit than it got. People shit on it and for some changes that they made. As far as multiplayer, I'd say probably, I don't know.
Okay. I'm going to kind of cheat. My favorite single player is
Wait, no, I lied. Multiplayer would be Borderlands 2. Duh. Sorry.
Yeah, that counts. Fair one. I played, like, 94% of the game over the free weekend they had on Steam, and it was pretty damn great.
It's fantastic. Alright, sorry. Go on.
I've only ever played that game in multiplayer. I tried single player maybe twice, and it's not fun. Not as fun.
It's better than it was in one.
I've never played two single player. I tried one, and I figured I'm never going to do that again. I was going to say my favorite single player one is Metroid Prime 3 Corruption. which is always an odd one because most people always assume Metroid Prime is the best of the three. I actually prefer 3. I think because you get the ship, you get hyperdrive, which is basically cheat mode in that game, but whatever.
Yeah, basically the quick travel. Like, I think I prefer 1 just because it does have a bigger sense of isolation, but 3's, like, just barely behind it.
Yeah, as far as atmosphere, I think there's no doubt that 1 wins. 3 doesn't hold the can, just because, I think because you're planet hopping, it just couldn't keep up with that. As far as multiplayer goes, I guess I'm probably going to have to go with Borderlands as well. I really don't want to know how many hours I've put into the two games. I know I put in well over 100 hours into the first game. I put in like 70 plus hours on a single character, and that was probably an outdated stat as it is now. But yeah, really fun.
What character did you play as in 2?
Who did I play as in 2? It was the person who had the ability to do the Darth Vader thing, the Force Grip.
Zero. No, that's Maya.
Yeah, the Siren. Yeah, I played the Siren in both games.
I played Mordecai in the first game.
I was, what's his name? Roland in the first one and Axton in the second one.
Yeah. Yeah. Have any of you read the comic book?
Nope. No. Is it good?
Anyhow.
All right, then.
We are going to wrap for this week.
James didn't give his answer.
I think James did give his answer.
I think I went over, but yeah, Half-Life 2 is my favorite single-player one. I think it's one of the best-paced, most quietly interesting. Like, I think in its finale, it touches on a couple interesting themes, but I have to revisit it and see if it nails them well. And then multiplayer Team Fortress 2. I feel like the 180 hours I've logged on Steam sort of speak for themselves.
And that was like this past week. But yes, we will be back next week with discussions on something. Who knows? We'll surprise ourselves. And for Justin, James, and myself, this has been Nerds on the Rocks, episode 185.
Bye.
Everywhere.
Oh my god. I forgot.